You are listening to Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. We now present the Catechism Hour, hosted by Brother Justin Bunyan.
Welcome to the Catechism Hour with me, Brother Justin Bunyan, and this week, again, I have the pleasure of having Deacon James Vu of the Heralds of the Gospel. He is in our seminary in Brazil. He's a monitor of formation, and again, it's a great joy to have him in studio with me.
It's my pleasure.
Today, we're going to continue our conversation we had last week on the virtue of fortitude. Fortitude, we discovered, is found in many facets of the human life. And today we're going to begin our conversation on how, if one lacks fortitude, one loves external goods. That sounds like a really weird issue, but what do you mean by external goods? What is meant by that? Or goods of the body. What is that? Why should we not love external goods? Because external goods, being the element of the body, or goods like riches, cars, honors, career, what have you, more than God, right? Because good, the good is God, and being that, God being the good, we have to love God first. And if we don't love God first, then it becomes disordered. That is exactly the issue that we have within society, right? We have a disordered love of things.
Of temporary goods, right?
Absolutely. They're not eternal. No
way. They're not eternal. If it was eternal, because our soul is eternal. So that's lack of fortitude, right? The lacking of fortitude. We love external good, that when we die, it's over.
But that's the issue, is that we have this attachment to what is around us, and that attachment of what was around us makes us cling to the here and now, right? Instead of clinging towards what's in the eternal. What happens when our love is deficient? When we establish ourselves as a deficient element, we do not love in itself what's deficient, what's lacking, what he kind of mental. But we have our love; it's wrong. Like, for example, we may love a new car, right? Insofar as it drives well and has good gas mileage, but the brake lights are smashed and there is a large dent in the passenger seat. And passenger's door, and we're missing a back seat.
For
and at that point, our happiness is a little bit lacking.
Oh, for sure.
We're not going to be showing off my car anymore, going, no. Hey, did you see my new wheels outside? And you guys see us saying it's all falling into pieces.
He would want to buy a new car, right?
Right. Then. He'd have the love, or in this problem, he'd become envious of you who has a new car. Like, I'll trade you my broken up rust bucket for your car. We are not entirely happy with ourselves. This is where we end up with our problem in our modern world, is that people are so attached to their deficient goods, their deficient selves, that they're not happy, right?
They're never happy.
And the more I need, the more I want. I heard a saying once put, an expression once put, and this was got me, was that the problem with the millennials today, and this is based in this problem, is their relationship with their phones.
Oh.
Is that, you see, Apple or Samsung announced they have a new phone, okay? The iPhone 12 and a half or the Galaxy 27 or whatever it is. And you see, I need that phone. I really need that phone.
Even though he bought the last generation.
Oh, I forgot that I was given as a gift on my birthday 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
The iPhone 11 and a half or whatever. I need that phone. I really need that phone. I can't sleep. I need that phone. I'm my heart is a little iPhone right now.
It's unbelievable. People lines up before it opens the store and they're waiting for hours or even days.
But the key about it is this, is that you waited, let's say you waited in the cold for 2-3 days. 2 days. You spent over $1,000 for the phone.
Which you can get in a couple months after, right?
For half the price.
For half the price.
But worse than that is that, let's say in 6 months' time, the newest of the new phones is launched. And that same sense of lack of calm, of patience or anything is gone. And now it's you're lusting after that phone. And this doesn't end, and you throw away the phone in which you had virtually sold your soul to whoever for this next phone, and this becomes one after the other, and there's no peace. It's deficient.
Not so
it's
well.
Lacking. There's no way in which it's ever going to satisfy you. So you're completely unhappy with oneself, and this is just talk about phones. Okay, where we can talk about cars, we can talk about relationships. The millennial issue with relationships. They say the millennial's issue with relationship is exactly the same way. It's disposable. You need this person until that person becomes 6 months old.
Yeah, dented or lack of brake lights.
And then we throw them away, we go for the next one. Right? We are not entirely happy with ourselves, and the more we plunge into moral depravity, the more unhappy we become with ourselves. The more we absorb all this, the more we become more unhappy. And the more unhappy, we become more self-loathing. We begin to hate ourselves. And this is a real issue today in today's
society
of such negativity. And the moral depravity goes in search of more moral depravity to hopefully find a solution where I can become happy. I'm not happy. You hear this constantly. I meet families and they're a young couple. They're married for, I don't know, 18 months. I'm just not happy. And it's just that the desire, the there's no virtue here. There's no love of God. There's no hope in God. There's no temperance. There's no prudence. There's no justice. There's no fortitude. There's nothing. It's just self-love. And that becoming of self-loathing becomes acidic and destructive. And thus, one lacks fortitude. Who lacks fortitude cannot but loathe themselves to the very depths of their conscience. And he loathes his lack of moral stature. He knows he's no good. He knows he's horrible. He knows he's despicable. But he knows too that he doesn't have the strength to rectify his boat. Why does he not have the strength? Because he lacks the virtue of fortitude.
That's why he can never enjoy the peace that he seeks, right? To maintain by refusing to endure the difficulty and the fear.
But there were little things. God had asked him to endure difficulties that were very small. Because he's dived into the cesspool of moral depravity, the difficulties and the fearful have become huge. The monsters that surround him are huge. But who made them?
He did.
He allowed his own fear to veer him off the course that reason had laid out for him. He knew he shouldn't have done that. He knew he shouldn't have done this. He knew. It wasn't that he didn't know. It wasn't that he was ignorant. He knew. But what did he decide? He decided, no, I'm going to do it my way. Cardinal Collins, the Archbishop of Toronto, has a saying which is kind of funny. He says, the music of heaven is sacred polyphony, where everyone has a place, everyone is different, but everyone works in harmony. The music of hell is jazz, because they do it their way. Everyone does it their way. And the end result is cacophony.
Horrible.
Right? And that's the problem. And we blame God in the end.
We always blame God in the end. Our evilness.
But that's important because many people say, no, God's not God. God made me this way.
Not true.
God made me. God. It's always God's fault. The God who you don't call upon, it always ends up being his fault in the end. You hear that with really poorly brought up children or children who are so filled with self-love that they encapsulate themselves. And when they mess up, when they make a disaster of their lives, do you know who they blame? The overindulgent parents. If you look at it, the last person in the world that they could have blamed were their parents. And it's the first person that they blame. So the person is so dominated by fear, and his fear is not modulated by reason. It does not receive perfection it requires. It needs it. So therefore, emotionally, the person is completely out of kilter. They're completely out of sorts. They're searching for love in all the wrong places. And in this way, those who lack fortitude and do nothing to set themselves up for it end up with depression. End up with a profound dissatisfaction with themselves, everything around themselves, and they will endure it later, if not sooner. And that, unfortunately, of course, I'm not talking about the medical situations, which are completely different, but this is where you end up into despair.
Yeah.
Because a person hits the bottom of this morass, and since they do not have love of God, they do not have a solution, because they've foregone it, they end up going towards suicide. They go towards, there's no hope. They lack hope.
Or other things, right?
Well, they've already gone through those things.
Ah, that's for sure.
It's true. Temporal evils have to be feared on some degree. Love of temporal goods can be, in certain circumstances, reasonable. They are to be loved not so much for their own sake, but for a higher good, right? For example, you use gold. You make a beautiful monstrance. The gold can be loved for the beauty in which the monstrance is made. But the gold for its own sake, for its own, for the avarice and the desire to have gold is wrong. But if we can bring it up a level, then we're good. Right? The monstrance as such, that's a beautiful element. And again, that's not for yourself. That goes back for posterity. That goes for everyone else. That goes for the good of society. For example, it is reasonable to fear a loss of one's home, of one's house, because a house can be instrumental in to attaining higher goods.
Such as good virtues.
Good. It's true that I love my body for its own sake, but from another angle, I also love my arms and my legs insofar as they're instrumental in attaining higher goods, therefore virtue, right? Your body is a vehicle. Without your body, you're not alive, right? God made your body. It's perfect in that sense. But when you adore your body, there's the issue. Our love for bodily external goods should not be greater or as great as to hinder us from the higher goods. We can't get so tied up with our silly little things that they get in way of higher things. For example, sports are always a good element for young people to use their energies and to build up their bodies. But what happens if per se, your soccer practice or your hockey practice or your baseball practice or karate or whatever it is gets in the way of going to mass. Right? That's an obligation held by the third commandment, right? And now you're saying, well, the taking care of one's body is somehow in conflict. What is the higher good? The higher good is my eternal salvation. Therefore, my higher good is going to mass. Therefore, it trumps.
So there is a balance.
There has to be.
There has to be a balance in this.
But there's also different situations. What is needed when we face a threatening situation? Be careful, like to carefully thought out battle plan for a difficult situation. The ultimate gain is to serve a higher good. But then there is things like inordinate daring, right? Foolhardiness. You were talking about the idea of going over the Niagara Falls in a barrel.
Oh, that
right? Is that necessary? No. That's not necessary. Is there any need to do it? No, it's you want to prove to others that you are greater in some way. It's pride. It's pride. You expose yourself to a danger which is not necessary. True fortitude attacks evil at the point when not doing so would endanger greater goods. For example, a priest or a bishop who chooses to significantly lighten the weight of his preaching at a particular time for fear of bringing down himself the wrath of the state, thereby allowing members of his church to remain ignorant, or allowing a portion of his church to be scandalized. This is to love temporal goods too much. He's fearful. That's not John the Baptist. That's not Thomas More. That's not John Fisher.
That's not any martyrs, right?
None. None of the great saints, friends of God in history, that does not attain. That does not line up with that. What that gives us is what? That gives us weakness. That's fear. Or politicians, you choose not to uphold what they know that is true and just for losing office. For example, moral issues, let's say abortion, or let's say euthanasia or something of that sort. It's because we are not allowing ourselves. It's often the case that people allow themselves to be adjusted by the zeitgeist of the moment, right? Whatever's popular, they just sort of go along with it. You'll find that if you follow certain politicians who have been around a long, long time, you'll see that they began their political lives as defenders of the unborn, for example, and they perceive at one point that to get ahead is not good. So they drop that and they acquire something else. And they say, I evolved. No, you're scared. And by being scared, you gave up the good fight.
You're a coward in the end, right?
Absolutely. You don't want to have friction. You want to be friendly, or you want to find another solution.
You want to be popular. That's what it is, right? But popular in the eyes of others, not in the eyes of God.
Yeah, we must be willing to attack evil despite the temporal losses in order to preserve virtue in others too. So there is two types of people. There are those who are of small souls, and those who are of large souls, right? And this is a real problem because smallness really takes away the possibilities. So we all know that if I have grandiose aims, grandiose horizons, I tend to have larger, more area in which I'm looking towards. I aspire to great and honorable ends. So the smallness of soul is a real terror. It limits people. Many, many adults, unfortunately, you meet them time and time again, have settled on a very small existence. which usually includes but does not seem to go beyond their own little house, their little lawn, their little garden, a little cottage, a little light that excludes. And they may, and it is becoming a real issue, again, within the millennials, excludes children. Because children are trouble, so we're not having them.
Exactly.
Not having them.
Nowadays.
It's like the generation before was, I have one kid, I have two kids. Now it's no kids, trouble. No. I don't want to grow up, really, so it takes away from my vacation time. It takes away from my possibilities.
Well, that's pretty different from where I stay, right, in Brazil. Mm. Well, the mentality at least, right? The mentality at least is very different. And interesting is that first world country has their issues, as well as third world country has their issues. But one thing for sure is that when there are difficulties, right? We're talking about fortitude here. When there are difficulties, some people, they say that third world country, they fall on their knees and they pray to God. In first world country, when there are difficulties, what do? They take their credit card.
Yeah, they depend on, it's part of that very small vision.
Exactly.
No supernatural.
How big is a credit card, right?
You are what you love. I love my credit card. I love my points. And if I spend it on the right day, I get double points. That's really good. Which in the end ends up equating into very little, right?
Very little.
In itself, and this is important, in itself, to have a house is not a sin. To have a well-manicured lawn is not a sin.
Not
to have a cottage is not a sin. But this smallness, this lack of generosity is a sin. It's lack of love of God. And what's really terrible with people who have this problem is that they lack any openness to God. They're very small. They're very vindictive. They're very it's horrible. It's really quite horrible, because one of the things that marriage calls onto itself within the very sacrament of marriage is openness to children, is that element of being with a large heart. And when the person falls into this vice, everything is small.
And that's like the contrary of saints, right?
Oh, absolutely.
There are saints that were very humble, but did great things. It wasn't where their city were, where they were. They preached all over to other places, right? They had large souls.
But like, the emotion that suffers in this case is the emotion of hope. The virtue of large-heartedness perfects hope and involves stretching forth of the mind to great honors. Like the mother who has little, who inspires her children to pray, inspires hope. But not hope in themselves, hope in God. But the mother who tells her child just, oh, don't worry about it, I fix all problems, inspires no hope. We see what the problem is. Deep down, the problem is there, right? And this is what becomes a problem. Later on, we fall in all other problems. We have this problem of what is success? What is a successful person? Is it that I have financial freedom, I have some financial success? Is it that I have great honors and glories? Or if I'm a friend of God? We live in a hedonistic culture, which pleasure is regarded as the principal good. The life is a pursuit of wealth, is only life that makes any sense. Wealth buys pleasure. So pleasure is the end. Wealth buys pleasure. That is a successful life. If I have no pleasure, if I have no wealth,
I have no life.
I am a hopeless person. And that's why many people wonder why there's a crisis of vocations. And that's why, because our families produce this mentality. And this mentality is the seedbed for a lack of vocations, because I have to produce wealth if I'm going to have pleasures, if I'm going to be successful. Since I'm not, if I'm going to offer up my ability to have it, then I can't. We honor athletes and their athletic achievements. But athletic achievement is not great.
Not necessarily, right?
Not in the absolute.
Exactly.
If look, if I'm feted as this great athlete in a small town in, let's say, northern Ontario, but in the big picture, when I go to the big cities, I might be a great thing in my little town, but in the great city, I'm not special. But let's say I'm a great athlete in the city of Toronto. But if I go to the great cosmopolitans of great athletes, I might not be much. But neither is an intellect or a well-educated man necessarily great and worthy of honor. But the large-heartedness is about the pursuit of great honors, because honor is itself an external good. But people are honored principally on account of their virtue. People love those who have great hearts, who have great vision.
That's why when you look at history, right, you see saints, everyone. Back then, the transportation was not like nowadays. You got highways, you got cars. But everyone who found out that there was a saint in a place far away from their house, they would go there. They would go there to see them, see the saints, right?
Magnanimity inspires moral excellence, since generosity, gratitude, and benevolence savor excellence. This is what we have to aim for, to get this smallness of soul out of us. We should have it nowhere close. This largeness of heart, such a regard of external and fear of evils, such as they incline to pursuit of justice and other virtues, thus they do not conceal truth on account of fear, and are given over to complaining. You get a person who always is complaining, always is yeah. It's an indicator of a small soul. Those who try to find the better things, they have larger souls. They try to look towards what is good, because we're looking towards the good, who is God. When they're always complaining and it's always petty and it's always about their aching leg or whatever, or their little garden, know that's a sign of a small soul. But we're going to get to another point soon, which is this greatness of soul begets, unfortunately, some vices that have to be looked at. We have to regard these points as necessary to accomplish deeds of virtue, but we have to watch out for the other points, right? Every virtue brings certain beauty to the human character. And this virtue of largeness of soul gives a luster over and above all others. It gives them greatness. It raises the stature of the human character. It gives them a beautiful character in such ways of unity of matter and spirit. It manifests in their consonance, right? Now, what's the problem? Original sin. Those who have great souls are open to other problems, correct?
Exactly.
Such as, what are some of them? Presumption, vainglory.
Ambition.
Ambition. Ambition. But ambition is good in its right place. So we're going to have a break right now, and then we're going to continue and look at ambition, vainglory, and presumption. See, how can we avoid those things? Back in a quick moment's time.
See you.
You are listening to the Catechism Hour here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. To contact us, you can tweet us at Radio Maria Can or email catechismhour@radiomaria.ca.
Welcome back. So we're going to continue our conversation on ambition, vainglory, presumption, and many of the other, some of the virtues that come with this beautiful overarching virtue, cardinal virtue of fortitude. So let's start, right? Some people may, okay, so let's start by refining our understanding of this virtue and better appreciate what it is and what it isn't. So let's first look at its excesses. Original sin is a terrible thing. It gets involved in everything. So what are some of the excesses that you can fall into with this virtue of large-heartedness?
Presumption, vainglory, and ambition.
So what's the first one we're going to hit? We're going to hit a lack of humility. So St. Thomas Aquinas says, humility makes us honor others and esteem them better than ourselves. Sometimes that can be a problem. Our inclination to sin and our complete dependence upon divine grace, difficult sometimes. The Achaemenids are inclined to deem themselves worthy of great things in consideration of the gifts they hold from God.
But, you know, the interesting part is that they recognize their own defects as well and weakness as human nature. And they have tendency of inclination to sin. But the difference is that they know that they depend upon divine grace to help them.
If that's there, then glorious things happen.
That is
when
exactly
that part
true.
Becomes defective, we have an issue. Confidence of oneself and others is part of this beautiful element of those with those large hearts. But confidence in oneself can be inordinate by way of excess. Too much confidence in oneself, eek. But then this becomes presumption and is rooted in an inaccurate assessment of oneself. The presumptuous tend to do what's above their power. Their hope in themselves is disordered because their love of themselves is disordered. Again, when we become disordered, everything is disastrous. This is why presumption tends to go hand in hand with personal pride. You get a person with these grandiose visions, persona, and they're proud. Ugh. And they become impossible to be around.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Having absolute no confidence in anyone is certainly not a sign of emotional health either. Other extreme or overconfidence in others stems from a lack of sound observation, an inability or refusal to see the defects in others. This flaw can sometimes be disguised as a virtue. And the devil's really good at this. He disguises defects as virtues. So in this case, it's the positive disposition. Is the person's blind? He doesn't see anything. He's blind. But there's nothing virtuous about being positive about a situation that has not been properly assessed. Just as there is nothing virtuous in being negative when there's much to be confident about. The quest for honor is inordinate when a person desires the recognition of an excellence that he does not have. How many people are super confident about their glorious beauty and they're ugly? Or their athletic abilities, and they're pathetic. And it's this lack of vision of oneself. They don't see themselves properly.
It's lack of humility.
Ah, they don't see themselves as what they're supposed to be.
Sometimes the worst thing is that they want to be someone else that they're not called to be.
And they want a fair share of honors. And when a person desires honor for himself without referring it to God, so they absorb it from God and they say, you know what? My intelligence is all because of me. I gave myself the gift of intelligence. I ask this to children many times. I say, how many of you buy gifts for yourselves? And the children go, no. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine packaging your own Christmas present and giving it to yourself? And going, wow, amazing. And when the children put their hand up, you're mentally ill. I'm like, you got it. Proud people are mentally ill because they don't see what the gifts they receive. The quest for inordinate, when it's pursued for the sake of being honored, and it's honor for honor's sake, is called wrongful ambition. It's when we want for want's sake, not because of what God wants of us, not because of a calling, a vocation. No, it's, I need more, I need more, I need more. And you're like a frog smoking a cigarette. At one point, you explode. It's gross. But it's us. The truly magnanimous people do not love themselves more than others. Rather, they love the other as another self or for God's sake. Now, we meet people who love themselves for themselves' sake. That's not a healthy situation. The heart of the ambitious rests in honor of itself without reference or profit of others. They care about whom? They care about themselves. So, vainglory. What is vainglory? Vainglory is the inordinate desire for glory. It's to be known by everyone. I am pious. I am glorious. I am God's gift to the universe. And there we have the problem with vainglory right there. It's a lot of I involved. It's a desire for glory that's inordinate. It is desired for its own sake. I want to be glorified for glory's sake. There's no helping of others. There's nothing. There's no other involved here. It's all about me. Me. Lots of me. Lots of I. There's nothing helpful for anyone else, and there's nothing greater. For example, the great saints, they became very well known, but they did it for the good of others. The other was important.
Well, the interesting thing is about that when you talk about saints as well, that there were some saints that had super visions, apparition of Our Lady, but they had nothing to the vainglory. Until their death, right, Brother Justin?
Mm-hmm.
They were not known about the vision. In one of the convent, right, they said that there was a saint and she had visions of Our Lady, but no one knew that, who found out who she was only after death.
So how do we know? What are some of the symptoms that ourselves, it's always good to look at ourselves, because we look at someone else, it's always pin the tail on a donkey. We're always good at getting at everyone else. We're hard to look at ourselves. But look at ourselves. If we have vainglory, how do we know if we have it? So let's go through it.
I think first thing of all is disobedience.
A lack of ability to obey. Can't obey anyone. Because I'm always right. I'm right. It's all about me, right? So, yeah.
Then boastfulness, I think, would be another one, right?
Always there, talking about himself. I am impressive. I am the most impressive. So boasting, always talking about oneself.
Hypocrisy. Hypocrisy was, as our Lord Jesus Christ said to the Pharisees, right?
And the vainglory, what the Pharisees are all about, right? Our Lord describes them with big letters all the way around. Contention. They're always fighting with everyone. They've always got issues. They're never settled.
Obstinacy as well.
My way or no way.
I think another one, I think, what we could put as discord, right?
Yeah, they always fight. You never have that person say, well, we put this person. No, that person, yeah, I don't know. They're going to have issues. No matter where they are, they have problems.
They give problems.
They are a problem, always. But they're always the most pious.
Always. Most humble.
Their humbleness is their most glorious virtue. I had a person tell me that once. They said, it was in a visit we were doing, a Marian mission, and this lady came forward saying, the virtue which I most shine in is my humility. I didn't know what to do with myself. I thought I was going to die. I was like, yeah, oh, I guess so.
It's almost like saying, it's like a person that's noble, like he comes out, I'm a noble person. You don't need to say it, right?
If you are, people know you are.
Yeah, I know.
Now, this is an interesting one. Love of novelties.
Mm.
They always have to have something new. There's never any consistency. There's never anything that's stable.
That's in our society.
Well, it's the cell phone issue. It's this love of novelties. I got to have the newest, bestest thing because I'm not at peace within myself. But this can be the vain could strive in many ways to make their excellence, showing everyone else to show all the others that you are inferior. You are graced by having my presence. My humility is here, and everyone should be in awe of me.
That would be good if they had virtue, right? Then they would give it to other ones, right?
They don't. They think they do, but they don't. They are not readily able because of their stubborn attachment, and it's incredible. They're attached to their own opinions. It's my opinion, it's my way or no way, right? But I'm humble. I forgot to tell you that. But don't you dare touch my humility in any which way.
It's experiences when you go to visit other people and you come to the house and it's all about them.
It's like, and what happens is if you dare to interrupt, to talk about something else, even if it's so simple as the weather, which in Canada is a common conversation, they cut you off. And it's like, how dare you stop me from talking about myself? And it's horrible because sometimes you sit there and you just like a bystander, just listen. And it's the patio of vanities. So George begins talking about himself until which point no one else can take it anymore. And they cut him off. And then someone else, in the idea that they're talking about something about God, but the reality is talking about themselves. And then they go on for a while until no one can take that guy anymore. And then they cut and cut and cut. And it's this the situation of just vain. It's vain speaking. And it's all about glories of who. And he's like, if you are involved, know that it's no good.
Interesting thing, fact, a historical fact, that is that there was a great diplomat that said that the easiest way to get rid of someone is talk about yourself. And the best way to keep a visitor with you is to talk about them.
So it's about the other.
Yeah, it's about the other.
See, but that is showing the next virtue, which is magnificence, right? It's the other. When you do it for the other, that's virtue. Now, can you imagine that reversal of my table that I was just talking about, the vanity of patio of vanities,
exactly,
and flip it on its head, in which each one tries to please the other. And by pleasing the other pleases the other, okay, and it becomes mutually a situation where each one elevates. It's almost like the convivium of St. John of the Cross and St. Teresa of Avila, in which as they begin to speak about their experience with God, they elevated each other. And at one point, both of them are on the roof in ecstasy, mutually sharing their view of God. So it's a right relationship with all things. And magnificence can also be the right relationship with money, with other things, but it's in its right place. Everything is in its right place and is where it belongs. But I wanted to get to, before we end our conversation today, patience. Patience. We talk about patience, but I don't know if we understand it as a virtue.
We talk about it, but are we patient with each other?
Are we patient with ourselves?
Oh, that's another story. That's another question.
So life brings with it all sorts of hardships, right? Everything comes. There's all kinds of things. And if you look at someone who says that person doesn't suffer, know that they suffer in ways that you have no idea.
Exactly.
Many of them are more afflicted than others, but still, look, everyone's got their cross and everyone's got to carry it. Rarely things go our way. Human beings are continually developing and having difficulties both psychologically and also emotionally.
I would say morally as well.
Morally, absolutely. Moral sufferings are far worse than the other ones. And they're always linked to the other ones.
Always.
The moral ones always are connected emotionally and psychologically because we are body and soul. We can be in a very difficult situation, difficult times in our lives. We are often cause of great sorrow to others. We cause sorrow to others, right? We forget that sometimes. We believe we're a vehicle of only happiness and lilies and roses, but many times we are thorns.
Exactly.
Hardships lead to sorrow. Sorrow can lead and beget, unfortunately, the vice of anger.
And I would say after anger, hatred.
Hatred of God. Unfortunately for myself, I avail myself a lot of the oncology departments of hospitals mm-hmm. because I have cancer. And the amount of hatred, the amount of anger that you feel, you imbued in these buildings is impressive. I was talking with my doctors, and one of the doctors, they noted me and said, you know, you're the first one who came in here who didn't say, why not? Why me?
Wow.
And I said, I'm the first one. That's a very bad situation everyone wanted to curse someone else. It was like, why not him? Why not Joe? Why not Sally? Why not Bob? Why not you? And that's a problem. And that begetting of anger and hatred to God. But you forgot, I don't believe in God. But I hate a God that I don't know. Because the soul of the human is intrinsically theological, and we know that there's a God, even if we deny him. So that hatred begets unjust injury, verbal and physical. You know those people you meet that you say, hi, how are you? Or, excuse me, can you move that paper there? And then all of a sudden the person just explodes. They're like a nuclear reactor, right? They just spew nuclear holocaust on everyone around them. That's a person who has had hardships, but didn't know how to put them in the right order. And they hate everyone, including God. That's why emotional sorrow needs to be moderated by the use of reason. Reason is so important. Put it in its right place. A patient teacher will help their students, right? The virtue of patience is the habit by which we endure hardship and we maintain the course of action set out by reason. It's when reason kind of comes into the emotional life and says, listen up, we're doing it this way. This is the right way of doing it, not the insanity of allowing your anger to take over and then the madman just running around and just smashing things.
That's a lack of fortitude.
Absolutely.
Nowadays, you see in society,
We see that, and that's another argument also for the euthanasia question. People, they say, I'm going to kill a sick person because too much. But why is it too much? Well, it's inconvenience. It's an inconvenience. The patience is not spineless. It is not excessively meek. Okay, mm-hmm. It's not this excess, like softness, which would be passivity.
Not so.
Right? Because sorrow is good. It's a good thing. It can bring us closer to God.
For example, Saint Monica, right? She had patience with who? Her son.
For 30 years.
30 years.
But she wasn't impassive. She was like, I don't care.
I don't care, and I don't want to convert my son. I don't want him to become, I want him to become a sinner. Not like that. She wanted to convert him.
Absolutely.
But with patience, right?
Because that sort of patience is merely a front that disguises cowardly and unjust spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Another virtue that moderates hope as it bears many things, it bears difficult things to endure, is this element of being able to carry the difficult things for the long time. Chronic illness, difficult parents, difficult children, difficult spouses. That element of carrying one's cross is an element of strength. Right? Consistency is a virtue which keeps us to endure the toil which involves persistently in accomplishing good works. And delicateness is the last one I want to hit at before we end today, mm-hmm. which is the element of being able to be a delicate soul, to being able to be someone who can help others.
One would think on the contrary, right? Fortitude is a person that is strong and not delicate, right?
Or rough.
Or rough and tough.
Rough, tough, and mean. But delicateness is something which is an element, a nobility of the soul.
That's impressive.
Which is shaped by the fire and the anvil of suffering. Those that suffer well are delicate. And I'm not talking about effeminate. I'm not talking about...
whatsoever, right?
No, we're talking about that true delicateness of spirit. The way in which our Lord was on earth, he was incredibly delicate. No one ever said he was brutal.
Or even the contrary,
his,
right?
Even his enemies said he was good. Mm. Even his enemies said he was good, right? Even his enemies would, with a backhanded compliment, saying he denied no one. But when he needed to be, he was extremely strong. So today we finished our conversation on the virtue of fortitude. I hope it was as entertaining as it was to do with you, for you. Fortitude is so beautiful. And talking it through, you get through a lot of other elements which are so important. But unfortunately, our time is at an end. I'm going to ask Deacon, before he travels to Brazil, to give us his blessing.
For sure. Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, Pater et Filius et Spiritus Sanctus.
Amen.
May God help you all and our ladies.
Thank you. And see you next week. God bless.
To the Catechism Hour, hosted by Brother Justin Bunyan, here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are.